documentation on Sydney of the fact that they know the vaccine is deadly. They know the thimerosal destroys the minds and fertility of the children, and that's why they're given it. So, and then we've got the DVD, the Vaccines and Brain Development by Dr. Blaylock. We have a DVD by Sherry Tenpenny on vaccinations. We've got a whole flock of tape sets. Let me suggest Vaccine Update 2009, Vaccine 4 tape set. Four tape set on the HPV, that's the human papillomavirus infection, on the anthrax infection, anthrax vaccine. So we have the HPV vaccine, the anthrax vaccine. We've got all sorts of information. You need to get it, and you need to help us get it out across America. And we carry Neil Miller's wonderful little book, Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? His book on autism, which tells you the congressional hearings, totally covered up by the control media. And we've got a fairly large book by Neil Miller. It's called the Vaccine Safety Manual. This and so much information is available from Radio Liberty. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please get the information. Go to our webpage at RadioLiberty.com, and then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
It's no secret that Genesis Communications Network depends on listeners like you. Now you can do even more to hear Genesis shows in your area. Simply call your local radio stations and tell them about your favorite GCN programs. It's easy. Log on to GCNlive.com or call us toll free, 877-807-4048. Make a difference. Call your local stations and contact us through affiliate relations at GCNlive.com or call 877-807-4048. Call today.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fiber.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. slightly back out with underneath the evidence in the essential calibre and machine. It's a sort of well thought that he said they were aligned with the essential trend of being caused by the flu, but when I'm talking about the world of tomorrow, it will be born out of this direct because of this elected group. And then he said,
with this massive occult movement which dominates our nation today, and which our churches never talk about, and which our leaders never talk about. But you pick it up, the story from there, Dennis.
Well, I'm going to have to do a little digression here since you mentioned about Teilhard and excommunication, because some of your listeners will be familiar with this and some won't. But there's really there really was a schism. They don't call it that in the Catholic Church, but back 100 years ago, around the turn of the century, and Leo XIII as Pope, there was a vigorous defense by the popes at that time against what they called modernists or modernism. And you had Benedict XV, not the current one, but the Benedict before him, actually in 1920 writing what was called, the title of it was Bonum Sane. S-A-N-E, Sane. And it was a, what's called a motus proprio. That's sort of, it's not an encyclical, but it's like an opinionated speech sort of article. And in there, he was warning this Pope Benedict about the future, and there's this socialism coming, and man would create himself as God, and you know, we got to watch out for this stuff, and that's what these modernists were. And there was a tremendous war going on, and this is the period that Teilhard was in. He was in the first half of the 20th century, and he would, you know, concoct the Piltdown Man. You may remember that sort of evolutionary breakthrough. Aha! You know, evolution has proven the Piltdown Man. Well, he was part of that scam, and so he was a renegade Jesuit, so to speak. And at that time, he really had run into disfavor. However, as the century progressed, you would have Pope John the 23rd in the early 60s, and he was persuaded. Some people say he was selected because he wasn't going to be around long. They knew that. And so they said, okay, yield.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Dr. Dennis Ketty, talking about what happened when Chardin was actually excommunicated, and the schism within the Catholic Church. Some people were very, very concerned about modernism, about this move towards socialism, the move away from traditional Catholic values. And there were others, of course, within the hierarchy of the Church who embraced these New Age and occult philosophies. And this has been going on for a long time, not just in the Catholic Church, but in the Protestant Church today. But certainly it was much more prevalent at that time. So you pick up the story.
Right. And so a lot of the shenanigans, as it were brought about by what we call the Catholic theologians. They were sort of the intellectuals, and among them were Jesuits. I mean, that's what the Jesuits are known for, sort of this intellectual, professorial types. And they were, you know, I won't go into the history of the Jesuits. They were established for a specific reason, so forth and so on. But anyway. So as you progress through the 20th century, around 1960-ish or so, John the 23rd becomes Pope, and he's selected. The sort of story is, if you listen to Malachi Martin and some others, because he's not going to be around too long. He's like old, and they can sort of sneak something by him. And so they persuade him to have Vatican II, which is supposed to be simply opening the windows and letting some fresh air in. Well, anyway, the theologians really sort of kidnapped the Second Vatican Council, and basically they come out, the theologians would say, okay, here's what this really means. You know, here's what this really means. It's sort of like when Congress passes a law, And then you have these bureaucrats drafting regulations, which are the enforcement mechanism. Well, the theologians say, okay, here's what Vatican II really means. And what they came out with basically was, let your conscience be your guide, you know, whatever. And so you literally, beginning after Roe versus Wade, had groups called Catholics for Free Choice, you know, for abortion, even though the Catholic Church had taught forever and ever that abortion was wrong. And so then you had Pope Paul VI, and he would pick up on this. He actually said the smoke of Satan is within the Church. But this doesn't mean, a lot of people interpret him as therefore a good guy. Well, not really. He had something called, I think 1966, an encyclical, I believe, Populorum Progressio. And I put the quote in my book, The Globalist, where he said, yeah, we need a new juridical world order to run everything and so on. So he was all, you know, all for this new world order and so on. And so as the time passed, and then John Paul II comes along, you have this sort of ingrained attitude. John Paul II, John Paul I, there's some debate about whether he was killed or sort of accidentally died. But anyway, John Paul II comes along, and he's saying things that the previous popes had never said. You know, okay, evolution, yeah, sure, why not? Good Hindus go to heaven. You know, all this sort of stuff that had never been in the 2,000-year history of the Church. And you have to remember about him. I don't want to go into this too much because I went into it in my book, Now's the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order. He actually, when he was in Poland as a young student there, his mentor, I won't say he, but his mentor was enamored of certain what we call New Age things today. They had, I think, even a Blavatsky thing, treatment they were looking at, and so forth. And I'm not saying he was involved, but his mentor, I think it's Kowalski, I forget the pronunciation of the word. But when he was a young fellow, he used to be in what's called the Rhapsodic Theater, which was like a stage production and so on, and they'd act out what we would call these sort of New Age things today, almost like the existentialist Camus and Sartre and so on. So anyway, this modernism kept coming and coming and coming and gaining strength. And why am I, you know, going on about this? Well, because after, say, mid part of the century, Teilhard started to actually come back into favor. I think, I forget whether it was John Paul II or one of them said, hey, you know, why don't we have a day celebrating the anniversary of Teilhard's birth or, you know, something like that. So, yeah, Teilhard was a real serious problem. And the popes early on recognized it, but now, with this let your conscience be your guide attitude, Teilhard, you know, he's a lot of Catholic priests and theologians say, yeah, he's a great guy, you know, really forward thinker. And so now back to the article. The point about that quote I'm reading is, when you think of, you know, some great thing sort of smiling on you, your tendency is to say, oh, look, some sort of beneficent ruler and so on. But Teilhard is actually talking about this universal horror is going to smile on us and take us, and it's more than human arms. I mean, he's clearly indicating this isn't a human thing. You know, it's not like your local king or queen or something. And obviously he's referring to, as Dr. Stan mentions many times, these sort of ascended master Luciferian types is what he's talking about. And, you know, he thinks, oh, this is, you know, this is good. You know, this is the totalitarian regime. These little, you know, worthless, pitiful things in the hospitals. We're wasting a lot of time on these so-called human beings. And, you know, we got better things to do. So, he's a guy of our age, our time. And I remember Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson, who's a Catholic. His father was Edward White Benson, who was Archbishop of Canterbury. But little Robert converted and became a Monsignor in the Catholic Church. And he's the one that in 1907 wrote that book called Lord of the World. And he puts at the front of that, you know, I've got to be careful what I'm saying here. And that's because little Robert, around 12 years or so of age, his father, the Archbishop of Canterbury's second wife, was a Mary Sidgwick, and her brother was Henry Sidgwick, one of the founders of this Society for Psychical Research. And so those guys were into stuff and plotting stuff. And these aren't, you know, just a bunch of wackos. This is like Prime Minister Arthur Balfour would be in there, and Gladstone, and I mean, there's some big name people, Lewis Carroll, and some you know, big time authors were part of that thing. So Robert is writing in 1907, and you know, in 1917, he said it'll be this communist revolution. Then he said the Western scheme of free trade in 1989. You know, this is like 70 years into the future. And then he said ministers of euthanasia, 1998. Ministers of euthanasia. Well, that's it. I mean, that's what Taylor is talking about here. You know, why do we, he says, how should we, Teilhard says, how should we judge the efforts we lavish on all kinds of hospitals on saving what is so often no more than life's rejects? You know, just trash. Who needs them? And so this is the typical euthanasia and eugenic mentality. And so then what I'm saying is, in Teilhard, this particular book, Future of Man, is, I think it was written 1957-ish, something like that. He didn't live much longer. But even before him, like I said, 100 years or so ago, you would have these power elite agents like H.G. Wells writing just like that in his book Anticipation, where he's talking about this future world state. And Wells says, quote, the method that must, in some cases, be called in to help, to the help of man, is death. You know, this is just too bad. He says, the merciful obliteration, see, we're going to obliterate it, but mercifully, you know, we'll do it in a kindly manner. Merciful obliteration of weak and silly and pointless things. I mean, these are human beings. These are pointless things. They're things, see. And then he goes on, well, says, the new ethic will hold life to be a privilege and a responsibility, and the alternative in right conduct between living fully, beautifully and efficiently will be to die. You know, just, you know, when you're no longer useful, go get out of here, or we'll off you or whatever. End quote. And so if you think that we're not in the midst of this now, just ask yourself how a supposedly biblically oriented people can allow recently government, our government, to sanction the killing of an innocent woman like Terri Schiavo. And she wasn't the first. I mean, she wasn't the first or worst. There were others who were in worse, you know, situations, and long before her, that went through the same thing. But the point with Terri Schiavo was to shove it in our face. You know, we the power elite, have conditioned you, the sheeple, now to such a point that we think you are ready to just sit there, you know, on your backsides and watch and allow us to do this. It was a test, you know, a trial balloon. And sure enough, they were right. The public sat there and said, oh, you know, oh, golly, shucks, you know, oh, ooh, isn't that too bad, but what can we do? And at the end of the program last time, I mentioned, well, there was plenty of stuff we could do, or the Catholic or Baptist or church or whatever, or that, you know, Jeb Bush, governor of Florida, sort of wringing his hands, oh, what can I do? Well, the fact of the matter is, the basis of that case was that Terri Schiavo earlier had mentioned to someone, who then told her husband, I think it was, that, you know, if I was ever in a really bad way, I'd rather not be alive. And so he goes to this friendly judge who thinks like he does. The judge said, yeah, sounds right to me, and so let's do this thing, withholding normal body needs, you know, hydration and so forth. Basically, I mean, just killing them. My point is, if you look at that, what happened was an assisted suicide. They were saying, you know, she would commit suicide if she were able, because she told us she would not want to continue to live in that position. So if she could, you know, swallow a bunch of pills and kill herself, she would, so we're going to help her. And basically that's it. It's an assisted suicide. Well, the fact of the matter is, assisted suicide is illegal in Florida. I mean, they had the means right there, you know, just bang, we're taking over the situation. Assisted suicide's illegal here. That's the end of it. But nobody did. Jeb Bush didn't. You know, nobody in Congress did. The Catholic Church, the Baptist Church, you know, all of these big-time TV evangelists. Oh, golly, you know, what can we do? Well, the solution was right there in their face.
Well, you know, the whole idea of we're a nation of laws, and this judge, one judge, said it was all right. And night after night, I remember seeing the pictures of Terri Schiavo, and of course, she looked pretty good. Well, they didn't tell you that those weren't pictures of what she looked at that day as she was being intentionally starved to death. They'd been taken weeks before. Had they showed what she really looked like, there would have been outcry from the American people. But you see, they condition our minds. The television creates our reality, and it's a false reality. Well, Dennis, you go right ahead.
Yeah, you're right. What she really looked like at the end was, I mean, just awful. The, you know, lips, skin cracking off. That's what dehydration does. The case of not letting us see things and portraying this in a particular way is like I've written about before in this, the sort of psychological conditioning of the country. And they, as I said, the whole point of that was, this is in your face. We have conditioned you now to a point where you will not resist. You will simply go along with this. And so what you have then is, if we look at today, for example, and how all this fits with what's happening today, what you want to do is ask yourself about President Obama's health care proposals. And so the next thing in my article I do is I refer to a columnist. His name's Lee Siegel. And he posted an article a little less than a month ago, August 11th, titled Obama's Euthanasia Mistake. That's the title of the article. Now, what you got to remember about this is not a a right-winger, you know, a conservative who's against Obama and his health care. Lee Siegel loves Obama. Lee Siegel loves Obama's national health care plan. He loves it. He is not an enemy. He thinks it's wonderful. He just thinks there is this euthanasia aspect to it that's going to ruin the thing. And so that's all he's objecting to. He said, yeah, I love the plan. It's great. Obama's wonderful. We need national health care. But he calls this a mistake, that there is this element within the Obama health care proposals that really is euthanasia. And that's why he titles it Obama's Euthanasia Mistake. You know, all he says is you need to take this thing out and then everything's hunky-dory. But the point is, at least this guy, a liberal columnist, a strong supporter of Obama, at least recognizes that there's a euthanasia element in this. And he says, quote, make no mistake about it, determining when treatments are, quote, cost-effective, quote, at the end of a person's life, and which are not, is one of Obama's priorities. It's one of the principal ways he counts on, Obama, saving money and making universal health care affordable, end quote. And then Siegel referred to Obama's suggested commission of experts who would determine, quote, best practices, quote. This is sort of the death panel that people have labeled it. It's actually a commission that's going to determine best practices. And so Siegel says, when ABC's Diane Sawyer, quote, this is Siegel writing, when Diane Sawyer, quote, pressed him, that's Obama, to say whether those practices would be enforced by law, he, Obama, evaded the question, end quote. Now, there was a perfect chance for Obama to say, no, that this won't be enforced by law, but he didn't. He didn't. That's the key. He could have, but he didn't, which gives you a hint that down the road, these, quote, best practices, which will decide who gets what help and if they do and at what stage of life are they worth it or not, they will be enforced by law. He could have eliminated that possibility. He could have said no. He could have said, I am going to insist on this in the legislation that this will not be enforced by law ever, ever, ever. But he didn't. That gives you a clue as to what's really going on here. Now, Siegel in this column went on to write, quote, he's explaining now, you know, how did this happen? Where's this come from? And so Siegel says, quote, where is Obama coming from? A good part of the explanation has to do with the University of Chicago's law school milieu that Obama comes out of.
Hold this thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Of course, our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy is talking about the fact that the Obama health plan will justify euthanasia. I hear a lot of people saying, well, gee, I think that Medicare is great. I'd like to have Medicare for everybody. Well, Medicare really is very good for the people over 65. It's terrible for the doctors and hospitals, and it's terrible really for everybody else because they don't pay the full cost, so they have to cost shift. The expenses of the elderly, many of whom have plenty of money and could afford private health care. They have to cost shift that to the people who are actually paying the hospital bills and the corporations and the people who are paying the medical insurance. So the system really doesn't work because it doesn't pay its way. But of course, under this new plan, they're going to have to restrict access to health care. It is not simply by accident that the man who will be running this in large part is a man named, he's Ron Emanuel's brother. He has actually written extensively about how terrible the Hippocratic Oath is, because the Hippocratic Oath requires doctors to keep people alive. And he works for an institute that really supports the basic ideas of Dr. Kevorkian. They really want euthanasia here. They want to off the elderly people. People say that could never happen in America. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what this is all about. President Obama has said it quite clearly. There is no way we can balance our budget unless we get medical costs under control. And what he's really talking about is cutting back on health care to the elderly and killing off the elderly population. But they cannot admit that. I mean, there would be a tremendous outcry from the elderly. I mean, they think that they're entitled to be taken care of by the government. They paid in their money. They don't understand it's a Ponzi scheme. We put Bernie Madoff in prison because he ran a scheme where he put money out and paid dividends, and he'd finance that with new money coming into the system. That's what Medicare is. But unfortunately, with Bernie Madoff, money quit coming into the system when the economy turned down, and he couldn't keep up his payments, and he had to admit it was a Ponzi scheme. Medicare is not getting enough money in because there are almost 30 million Americans unemployed or underemployed. The money's not coming in. They're putting out more than coming in. The Ponzi scheme is beginning to collapse. We've got to kill off the elderly, and that's what it's really all about. And that's why Dr. Emanuel, who hates the Hippocratic Oath, who's openly written about how terrible the Hippocratic Oath is, has been appointed the czar, or one of the czars, of the new healthcare delivery system. Dennis, you pick up the story.
Okay, well, you've covered one of my future articles.
All right.
Well,
we still can talk about it, because I'm sure they'd much rather hear you. I just get so emotional when I think about how wonderful medicine was 50 years ago when I went into it, how terrible it's become.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things, my family and cousins and aunts and uncles had this physician when he was just starting out, I guess it was in the late 40s. And he was a good old doc. I remember when I was a little fella, about 3-4 years old, if I got a fever, he'd get out of the bed at 3 in the morning, drive over, and take care of me. A house call, no matter what time of day. He later became head of the medical society for the state. He's that, you know, that well respected. And I remember one of the last visits I had to him before he retired, he said, "I'm going to warn you, Dennis. All these young doctors are interested in is procedures. They get paid per procedure. Get them in, get them out." And he, this good old doctor, used to spend time to talk to you. I mean, he wouldn't like, you know, okay, your 5 minutes is up, get out next. He would actually engage in a conversation in which he actually, I think, played amateur psychologist. It wasn't just, here's a prescription for some medicine. He actually gave you sort of a soothing whatever. And my family and I used to joke about this old physician. I mean, he wasn't old at the time, but when he retired, he was getting up there. Everything he gave us, he had taken it himself. And then my uncle said, "Oh yeah, I went to him for such and such, and he gave me this prescription." And he said, "You know, I've just taken this myself, and so I know this is really going to help you." But the point of it was a reassurance. You know, you were at ease, you felt comfortable with his judgment, and so on. And like I said, one of the last things he did was warn. You know, these younger physicians, you know, I'm telling you, watch out for them. They're only concerned with, you know, get them in, get them out, procedures, I get so much dollars, and that's it. It was no longer a calling. It was simply a profession within which to make money. It wasn't like, you know, old Doc on Gunsmoke who would travel 20 miles at night to deliver a baby or something.
Well, I'll tell you what, the government got involved in this. They got into the medical schools, they took the idealism out of our schools, they took out belief in God. Medicine ceased to be a noble profession. Now it became simply a business with the doctors looking over his shoulder all the time, trying to keep ahead of the government and, of course, worried about how he's even going to meet his own expenses. Thanks to the government. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess it's Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and you go right ahead.
Okay, well, since you were talking about Dr. Emanuel, just a technicality there. The first name, Ezekiel, I believe he's not one of the, quote, official 32 czars. He's actually, I think he's Obama's health advisor, which is a title, but I don't, the health person is...
You're right. He is a special advisor. He is not yet promoted to czar. But Obama has more czars than the Romanovs did.
Sure, I think that's a good one. Let me see. Just take a second. Health reform czar is actually Nancy Ann DeParle. She's the technically speaking, she's the health czar. And the science czar is John Holdren and so forth. Yeah, he does. That's a good one. More czars than the Romanovs, right. Before I pick back up again, though, one last thing about Terry Schiavo. At the end, they showed pictures of her sort of okay. They didn't show the final pictures because, I mean, look, it was gruesome and so, you know, cracking skin and so forth. But one thing a lot of people forget is that when Terry Schiavo first had her condition, she wasn't bad. I mean, if you talk to the nurses who early on had her, she could actually communicate a little. I mean, she knew what they were saying. You know, pick up the cup, okay? You know, I mean, she at that time had basic capabilities. I mean, she wasn't well or anything, but she had basic capabilities. It was because, as the reports go, the husband kept saying, well, you know, give her less treatment, you know, less this and less that, and so actually she deteriorated from the time she initially came into the care of these people. So, I mean, it's a horrible story. But anyway, okay, so that's that. All right, now back to Obama, and Lee Siegel is saying, well, where's he coming from? And he's coming, Siegel says, from this University of Chicago Law School milieu that Obama comes out of. And then he says, it's very much like, I will get to Ezekiel Emanuel. My next column will be about September 11th because it's the 8th anniversary. The article after that will be about Obamacare, where I go into Ezekiel Emanuel and his mentor and stuff. Well, the same thing's true here. The most influential figure in that world, this milieu that Obama came out of, is, according to Siegel, is Judge Richard Posner, who, this is a quote from...
Oh, hold that thought. We want to get that as soon as we get back here. In just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course we've been talking about Obamacare. I prefer referring to it as the Kevorkian healthcare bill. But basically, it is all about rationing. Oh, what we want, of course, is quality care. No, the quality care is really the paperwork they're going to turn in. That's how they're going to tell about quality care. You got to have more paperwork. Those who turn in the most paperwork, the neatest paperwork, that's quality care. But the way that they're going to make this thing work is by rationing access and letting the elderly die. There really are people who believe in euthanasia, and some of them are working at the highest levels of our government today. Do you really want to turn your health care? Because remember, you're not going to get down the line, you're going to be able even to buy private health care in America. Down the line, this is the way it's going to go. You won't be able to buy private health care. Do you want to turn your health care over to people who believe in euthanasia. That's the same reason you shouldn't take vaccinations. Do you really want to turn what is injected into your body over to people who really believe there are far too many people in the world who would like to kill off 90% of the world's population? Because that is the common denominator behind so much of what's going on today. And everybody should know it. And isn't it amazing that the major media never shows you what's in Elbert and Georgia there? The Georgia Guide stones or quartz, Jacques Cousteau, who talks about the necessity of killing 350,000 people a day, or I think he'd use the term eliminate, 350,000 people a day, or so many of the people, Dr. Pianca down there, Pianca down in Texas, who wants to circulate a little Ebola and get rid of 90% of the world's population. Eric Pianca, professor at the University of Texas. There really are people who feel this way, and the media is covering up for them. And why don't they let the American people know about that so we could be critical of them? It appears that people in the media don't want the American people to know that there really are people working in our government today who believe in population control and euthanasia, like Dr. Emanuel, the brother, certainly, of the chief of staff in the Obama administration, Rahm Emanuel. Go ahead.
Right. Ezekiel Emanuel is the leading force and advocate of this stuff in the Obama administration. Let me once again digress to I want to be sure your listeners understand that this is not just a narrative, okay, he says this, they're doing this, blah, blah, blah. You need to, as I said, whenever something doesn't seem to make sense, step back and ask yourself, well, how will this that doesn't seem to make sense fit the power elite's goal? There are certain psychological manipulations that they use over and over again. To give you an example, it is a typical practice wherever you go in governments, or in Congress or legislatures, to ask for more than you think you're going to go get, so that when you back off and appear to compromise, you get what you wanted all along. In other words, if you want $500,000 for a project, you say, well, I submit my bill to appropriate $1 million for this project. And people yell and scream and all that. And then you say, okay, let's compromise. I'll take $500,000. And all of the opponents smile and say, well, look what we forced him to do. which is what he planned all along. And so that's a typical practice. So the same thing is the case with the Power League. What they do is these guys, in terms of euthanasia, Obama, whatever, they always have plausible deniability. They stay one step removed. You know, from the 1911 terrorists, they're one step removed. They don't call up 19 guys and say, okay, go fly into a building. It's an indirect thing. So the way this works in terms of euthanasia is they have a construct. Let's call him Hitler. So Hitler is a construct, sort of like Karl Marx was a construct. He's really Johnny come lately to this thing. He was, you know, bought and paid for. The League of the Just pays him, okay, Karl, you know, his father-in-law had explained the stuff to little Karl to begin with. So anyway, the paralegal creates a Hitler. And so Hitler is mean and nasty, and, you know, Jews and Catholics and gypsies, kill them, you know, euthanasia, wipe them out, they're useless, and so on. Okay, and then they say, we'll defeat him, all right? Wow, look, we've crushed Hitler. Isn't this wonderful? Freedom and goodness and liberation and so forth. So what you actually have here is a backing off from what is active euthanasia to what we have now is sort of an indirect or passive. You don't say, okay, look at those elderly people in that hospital over there in San Francisco. Let's go in there and inject them and wipe them out because they're useless. You know, this would be sort of the active Hitlerian thing. What you do is, like I quoted Dr. Richard Lawrence Dunnigan referring to Dr. Richard Day's speech, he says what they do, this is Richard Day, had been with Planned Parenthood as a national medical director for 3 days, had given this speech in Pittsburgh. And Dr. Dunnigan is there, and he's referring to what Richard Day said. And he says, medical costs, this is 1969, medical costs will be made so prohibitively high that people will accept euthanasia. So what, that's what they're that's what's happening to them. That's today. And this is it.
Incidentally, if anybody would like to hear those interviews with Dr. Dennegan, who heard Richard Day, who worked for the Planned Parenthood, medical director of Planned Parenthood, who was associated with something he called the Order, a secret group that was running America, and of course the interviews were done in the early 1990s, but the talk was given in 69 where they talked about how we were going to start building better cars in Japan than we were building in the United States, and that we were going to get the abortion legislation passed by the federal government, so you could have abortion, and so that certainly we were going to start paying fantastic salaries to the sports people. I mean, everything that he anticipated has come to pass, but you can actually hear those interviews in a four-tape set we offer called The New Order of the Barbarian. It is probably one of the most amazing things that we offer here in America at Radio Liberty. We offer a lot of amazing things. We even have a transcript of it if you want to read it. They laid out the whole thing in 69, everything you're seeing unfolding today.
Right. And so if you look at what this what we're talking about in the Obamacare and, you know, Ezekiel Emanuel and all of these people, it's the backing off of the Hitlerian force. In that Obamacare doesn't say, okay, when you're 75, report to, you know, that center over there to get your shots, and we'll have a casket waiting for you. I mean, it's not, you know, like Hitler, but what it does, it has the same effect as sort of a passive or indirect euthanasia. It says, oh my goodness, you know, medical care costs are so high. Golly shucks, you know, we don't have enough vaccines or kidneys or whatever it is for these people. Well, let's see now, who shouldn't get it? Oh, you know, John Smith over there is 80, and you know, John's getting a little old. Okay, well, we'll give whatever the medicine is, since it's not enough, to this younger person. They're just 21. Sorry, John, you know, we wish we had some medicine for you, but that's the way it is, and I guess you're going to die. And so it's sort of this indirect, John is dead, one way or the other, John's dead. But John wasn't ordered to report to a hospital for an injection which would kill him. John's just as dead, but, you know, it wasn't direct. And so that's basically what's going on. And Lee Siegel, in this column, is talking about Judge Richard Posner is the most influential person in that University of Chicago law school milieu that Obama's coming from. And he says, this is Siegel writing about Posner, Judge Richard Posner. He says, this guy, Posner, is both an enthusiastic advocate of euthanasia and an energetic eugenicist. And then he goes on, Siegel writes, he says, Cass, C-A-S-S, Sunstein, who was Obama's nominee for regulatory czar, that's the regulations. Now remember, that's the nasty thing. Everybody says, oh, look at this health proposal. Ooh, look at that education proposal. Ooh, look at that commerce proposal. The really nasty stuff goes on when they draft the regulations. You know, sometimes members of Congress, when they pass a bill, they don't recognize it later. After the regulations, some bureaucrats got these regulations, and the congressman said, what? Did we say that? Did we really say? So the regulation is what is enforced. And so this guy, Cass Sunstein, is the regulatory czar. And Siegel points out that this guy, Sunstein, is a disciple of Posner and believes in what Time Magazine, this is a quote, Time Magazine described as, quote, the statistical practice of taking into account years of life expectancy when evaluating a regulation, end quote. Translation, when you get old, you know, the regulation's going to say you don't get help. And that's what I was just saying.
Well, you know, it's interesting that over in Denmark and in Holland today, many of the older people just will not go to the hospital because
right.
They know they're going to be killed. You say that couldn't really be real. It really is. And we've talked to people who've been over there, and people are frightened to go to the hospital because that's where they simply eliminate them. After all, there really are too many people. Social Security is bankrupt. There's not enough money. That's another Ponzi scheme. And the only way that they can make it work is to start killing the elderly. That could never happen in America, and I would like to ask, why couldn't it happen in America? We aren't concerned. People here aren't concerned about all the innocent civilians we've killed over in Iraq, and it was all just a mistake. Oh, shucks, the president got the wrong intelligence and thought there were weapons of mass destruction. We're sorry about that, and we're sorry about what's going on over in Afghanistan, where all those people are getting killed and the civilians in Pakistan getting killed. But we have to be there to fight al-Qaeda. Of course, we're financing al-Qaeda by giving money to the Pakistani intelligence that's funding the Taliban and al-Qaeda, just like we provided the funds for Russia that supported the North Vietnamese, that supported the Viet Cong, who killed our boys in South Vietnam. It's deja vu all over again. But where's the outcry from the American people? Well, as long as we've got Monday Night Football, who's really concerned?
Right. Yeah, give them the circuses like back in Rome. That's right. Keep the masses entertained. In fact, I think yesterday I saw a news item that, surprise, a lot of our money, millions and millions of dollars that we're sending over to Afghanistan is winding up in the hands of the Taliban. How does this happen? Well, to do business there, you have to bribe the Taliban, so they won't intercept your convoy of oil or whatever it is. Okay, now, Taliban leader, here's your, $1 million, and so you don't attack our convoy of food, oil, whatever it is. And they say, okay, for $1 million, we'll let you go through. It's an enforcement racket here. Sort of like the mob back in the 20s, we will give you protection, you pay us and we'll see to it that nobody does anything bad to you, like that. In terms of hospitals, in case you think all hospitals are just wonderful hunky-dory and all doctors are pure and benighted and so forth, I'm sure, I don't want to get in trouble here, I'm sure that at Bethesda up in Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C., there probably are some really fine doctors, I'm sure. But I remember back when I was younger and Richard Nixon was president, and he had to go, for some mole removal, well, whatever it was. And I remember when they said, okay, we'll schedule you for this minor day surgery at Bethesda. I remember Richard Nixon said, Bethesda? I'm not going...
Well, he remembered what happened to James Forrestal. I actually interviewed I'm a fellow who actually practiced medicine here in town, had been the intern who examined Joe McCarthy when he went into Bethesda on Monday, and he was healthy, laughing, telling jokes. He did the history on him, and a week later, Joe McCarthy was dead. But that, of course, and they were angst. Everybody was so happy that Joe McCarthy was dead. He was very healthy, went into Bethesda. I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to go into Bethesda.
Well, that's what Nixon said. He said, Bethesda, he said, if I go in there, I won't come out alive. It was just that simple. He refused to go into Bethesda. Back to the article in Time magazine and so forth and so on. And so what we have is a sort of indirect or passive euthanasia. Golly shucks, we don't have enough money. And so I guess John Smith at 80 years old with his particular ailment will just be non-served or whatever. And so tough luck, John, you just die. Now in the article that I wrote, I go back and I explain how this sort of bizarre situation can happen. And I say perhaps the only way to explain the contradiction of a self-proclaimed biblical people accepting or engaging in widespread immorality is by looking at a world where things are increasingly the opposite of what they seem, as in a mirror or looking glass. There's a point to this. If one looks in a mirror or looking glass and raises the right hand, I mean, try this. Your listeners, try this. You look in a mirror, raise your right hand. It seems as if you're raising your left hand. It's the opposite of reality. Now, why am I saying that? Well, it's because in these people like the Society for Psychical Research guys who are planning our future 100 years in advance, Lewis Carroll's one of them. And it's not by accident that he titles his 1872 book, Through the Looking Glass. I mean, he has a reason for that. And I give several examples. You have Tweedledee and Tweedledum, they supposedly represent the opposite political parties, you know, like Democrat and Republican. But if you look at the picture of them, they're exactly alike. In reality, they're alike. Supposed to be opposite, they're not. Secondly, there's another character in there called Humpty Dumpty. Humpty Dumpty thinks he's just fine. You know, he's a cock of the walk. He's okay. But he's an egg, right? So he's actually fragile. And where is he? Is he laying in a nice bed of straw? No, no. He's precariously placed on a wall. And so I say here in my article, like many politicians who repeatedly clarify, that's another word for change, what they say, Humpty Dumpty believes a word, quote, means just what I choose it to mean, end quote. For example, even if it's inherently contradictory, like saying, you know, in Orwell's book, slavery is freedom. Or as Dr. Stan has pointed out, medical privacy will be maintained by putting your records on the internet. And so once Humpty Dumpty falls from power, because he really represents the power of the throne and the power behind the throne, he breaks, right? And then what's the quote? All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty in his place of power again. Now, you probably say, you know, back together again. Well, that was in the original 1810 rhyme. Way before Lewis Carroll did this story, there was a rhyme, 1810, you know, ancient English, you know, back together, together again. But he changed it. Lewis Carroll changed it to say, couldn't put Humpty Dumpty in his place. Meaning a place of power again. Couldn't get back there. In other words, when the U.S. is screwed up economically, that's it. You know, we will no longer be back the way it used to be. And I think I hear the music.
You do, and, of course, we're giving money to countries all throughout the world. We're fighting wars all over the world. We're having to borrow money, say, $4 billion a day, you know, just to pay our debts. We're going to have a $1.6 to $2 trillion debt as of the end of this month. But we're still giving money to other countries in the way of foreign aid. Tell me, does that really make sense to you? We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up our program with Dr. Dennis Cuddy, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dennis, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up today's program. As always, a pleasure.
Well, thank you, and I'll just continue for the 3 minutes with these examples, because it's not just one accidental example. Lewis Carroll's other book, he's noted for Alice in Wonderland, that was 1865. You'll remember, and they're not celebrating a birthday. You know, that's normal. You know, happy birthday to you. But rather, they're singing a very merry unbirthday to you. So, you know, totally the opposite of what's normal. Doesn't make sense. Also, you'll see that Alice meets the Red Queen as she's about to traverse a chessboard. She's there, and Alice has to get to the other side of the chessboard to become a queen. So, you know, the Red Queen's going to help her. Well, during Lewis Carroll's time, Britain was part of what was called the Great Game, like on a chessboard. And this was, at that time, for global dominance against Prussia and these nations. So what you have recently today is the same sort of thing. President Obama's advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, authored the Grand Chessboard about 1997, and he's talking about America's involvement in the same great game. Now it's against Russia, China, and so forth, for the Caspian oil and no other aspects of global dominance. Well, with the Red Queen, they're running. She and Alice running, you know, running along. And the Red Queen tells Alice, you have to run twice as fast just to stay where you are. And what does that mean today? One has to work twice as hard today just to maintain the same standard of living as in the past. You know, this thing, these books are not just little children's kiddie stories. These have deep political symbolism. And Alice in Wonderland, you got the Cheshire Cat's body, he repeatedly fades and reappears, but his broad smile's constant. That's like Obama, his substance and style respectively. Same thing, same symbolism. And one last thing, have you noticed how when Obama became president, his hair was starting to gray, but now it's somehow not gray anymore? I mean, you know, think about that. His hair is now getting ungray. Once again, style versus substance. Cheshire Cat, body fades, smile is constant. Obama, smile constantly, but lack of substance. Comes and goes like his gray hair.
Well, everything is illusion and delusion. Everything is perception. And certainly, when American people have got to understand our minds are being molded, our ideas are being created, our tastes are being formed by men men we really have never heard of. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. As always, it's a pleasure to have you with us, Dennis. We'll look forward to having you back next week, and we'll get a little bit more about this whole idea of, falling away. We'll be right back. Thanks so very much.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I hope you're out there and you've enjoyed the program with our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And this is Dr. Stan. We hope you enjoy our Friday programs with Dr. Cuddy, one of the most insightful researchers in the country. We do carry his book, Conspiracy, Secret Records Revealed. We carry his books on The Road to Socialism. That's The Road to Socialism. Mental Health Screening, the two books. But it really goes into socialism and philosophy. And these books are very important, and fortunately they are in print. And then, of course, we carry his timeline to the New World Order in as far as education, with I think there are 2,000 quotes in there. It is vitally important you have this information to understand what's going on. It's not happening by accident. There really are demonic forces out there directing domestic policy and foreign policy, because behind everything is what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you've not yet read my book, you need to get it and read it. You need to get Dennis's books, too. And that would be Conspiracy, Secret Records Revealed, The Road to Socialism, Mental Health, and then, of course, the timeline to the New World Order. And then, of course, if you'd like to hear this four-tape set, it's basically the talk that was given in 1969 by Richard Day, who had been the director of the Planned Parenthood. Dr. Dennegan was there when they gave the talk. And there are four interviews. Three were done by somebody else. I did one of them. But they're very, very revealing. We have a transcript you can get with that separately if you want it. One of the most important tape sets we have. Because we also have our four tape set on the secret government, which we recommend. The interview with Professor Quigley and Norman Dodd. And then the secret government. And basically, all of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We carry Professor Quigley's book. We carry the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. Books that you need to have to read to understand there really are secret societies. And behind that, powerful spiritual forces. You need to know how we finance the Communists, that's Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. How we financed and brought Adolf Hitler to power and financed him not only before World War II, but during World War II, and that is, of course, the book, The Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, and my little pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. We go into the other, and then we have an interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away. It's called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. If you want to know how we brought Fidel Castro to power and have kept Fidel Castro in power, well, the DVD is called World Revolution. You'll see my interview with Ambassador Smith, a billionaire who was the ambassador to Cuba at the time. The CIA and the State Department brought Fidel Castro to power. Why? You know, he's a communist. He's the enemy. No, he's a communist, but he's not the enemy of the people.